2. Shopping. Chapter 2.
A chair, a table, a lamp. Above, on the white ceiling, a relief ornament in the shape of a wreath, and in the center of it, a blank space, plastered over, like the place in a face where the eye has been taken out. There must have been a chandelier once. They've removed anything you could tie a rope to. A window, two white curtains. Under the window, a window seat with a little cushion. When the window is partly open, it only opens partly. The air can come in and make the curtains move. I can sit in the chair or on the window seat, hands folded, and watch this. Sunlight comes in through the window, too, and falls on the floor, which is made of wood, in narrow strips, highly polished. I can smell the polish. There's a rug on the floor, oval, of braided rags. This is the kind of touch they like. Folk art. Archaic, made by women in their spare time, from things that have no further use. A return to traditional values. Waste not, want not. I am not being wasted. Why do I want? On the wall above the chair, a picture, framed but with no glass. A print of flowers, blue irises, watercolor. Flowers are still allowed. Does each of us have the same print, the same chair, the same white curtains, I wonder? Government issue? Think of it as being in the army, said Aunt Lydia. A bed, single, mattress medium hard, covered with a flocked white spread. Nothing takes place in the bed but sleep, or no sleep. I try not to think too much. Like other things now, thought must be rationed. There's a lot that doesn't bear thinking about. Thinking can hurt your chances, and I intend to last. I know why there is no glass in front of the watercolor picture of blue irises, and why the window opens only partly, and why the glass in it is shatterproof. It isn't running away they're afraid of. We wouldn't get far. It's those other escapes, the ones you can open in yourself, given a cutting edge. So, apart from these details, this could be a college guest room for the less distinguished visitors, or a room in a rooming house of former times for ladies in reduced circumstances. That is what we are now. The circumstances have been reduced, for those of us who still have circumstances. But a chair, sunlight, flowers, these are not to be dismissed. I am alive. I live. I breathe. I put my hand out, unfolded, into the sunlight. Where I am is not a prison, but a privilege, as Aunt Lydia said, who was in love with either or. The bell that measures time is ringing. Time here is measured by bells, as once in nunneries. As in a nunnery, too, there are few mirrors. I get up out of the chair, advance my feet into the sunlight, in their red shoes, flat-heeled to save the spine and not for dancing. The red gloves are lying on the bed. I pick them up, pull them onto my hands, finger by finger. Everything except the wings around my face is red, the color of blood, which defines us. The skirt is ankle length, full, gathered to a flat yoke that extends over the breasts. The sleeves are full. The white wings, too, are prescribed issue. They are to keep us from seeing, but also from being seen. I never looked good in red. It's not my color. I pick up the shopping basket, put it over my arm. The door of the room, not my room, I refuse to say my, is not locked. In fact, it doesn't shut properly. I go out into the polished hallway, which has a runner down the center, dusty pink, like a path through the forest, like a carpet for royalty, it shows me the way. The carpet bends and goes down the front staircase, and I go with it. One hand on the banister, once a tree, turned in another century, rubbed to a warm gloss. Late Victorian, the house is a family house, built for a large, rich family. There's a grandfather clock in the hallway which doles out time, and then the door to the motherly front sitting room with its flesh tones and hints. A sitting room in which I never sit, but stand or kneel only. At the end of the hallway, above the front door, is a fanlight of colored glass, flowers, red and blue. There remains a mirror on the hall wall. If I turn my head so that the white wings framing my face direct my vision towards it, I can see it as I go down the stairs, round, convex, a pier glass, like the eye of a fish, and myself in it like a distorted shadow, a parody of something, some fairy tale figure in a red cloak, descending towards a moment of carelessness that is the same as danger. A sister, dipped in blood. At the bottom of the stairs, there's a hat and umbrella stand, the bentwood kind. Long, rounded rungs of wood, curving gently up into hooks shaped like the opening fronds of a fern. There are several umbrellas in it. Black for the commander, blue for the commander's wife, and the one assigned to me, which is red. I leave the red umbrella where it is because I know from the window that the day is sunny. I wonder whether or not the commander's wife is in the sitting room. She doesn't always sit. Sometimes I can hear her pacing back and forth, a heavy step and then a light one, and the soft tap of her cane on the dusty rose carpet. I walk along the hallway, past the sitting room door and the door that leads into the dining room, and open the door at the end of the hall and go through into the kitchen. Here the smell is no longer of furniture polish. Rita is in here, standing at the kitchen table, which has a top of chipped white enamel. She's in her usual Martha's dress, which is dull green, like a surgeon's gown of the time before. The dress is much like mine in shape, long and concealing, but with a bib apron over it, and without the white wings and the veil. She puts on the veil to go outside, but nobody much cares who sees the face of a Martha. Her sleeves are rolled to the elbow, showing her brown arms. She's making bread, throwing the loaves for the final brief kneading, and then the shaping. Rita sees me and nods, whether in greeting or in simple acknowledgement of my presence, it's hard to say, and wipes her floury hands on her apron and rummages in the kitchen drawer for the token book. Frowning, she tears out 3 tokens and hands them to me. Her face might be kindly if she would smile, but the frown isn't personal. It's the red dress she disapproves of and what it stands for. She thinks I may be catching, like a disease or any form of bad luck. Sometimes I listen outside closed doors, a thing I never would have done in the time before. I don't listen long because I don't want to be caught doing it. Once, though, I heard Rita say to Cora that she wouldn't debase herself like that. "Nobody asking you," Cora said. "Anyways, what could you do, supposing?" "Go to the colonies," Rita said. "They have the choice." "With the unwomen and starve to death and Lord knows what all," said Cora. "Catch you." They were shelling peas. Even through the almost closed door, I could hear the light clink of the hard peas falling into the metal bowl. I heard Rita, a grunt or a sigh, of protest or agreement. "Anyways, they're doing it for us all," said Cora, "or so they say." "If I hadn't have got my tubes tied, it could have been me, say I was 10 years younger. It's not that bad. It's not what you'd call hard work." "Better her than me," Rita said, and I opened the door. Their faces were the way women's faces are when they've been talking about you behind your back and they think you've heard. Embarrassed, but also a little defiant, as if it were their right. That day, Cora was more pleasant to me than usual. Rita, more surly. Today, despite Rita's closed face and pressed lips, I would like to stay here in the kitchen. Cora might come in from somewhere else in the house, carrying her bottle of lemon oil and her duster, and Rita would make coffee. In the houses of the commanders, there is still real coffee, and we would sit at Rita's kitchen table, which is not Rita's any more than my table is mine, and we would talk about aches and pains, illnesses, our feet, our backs, all the different kinds of mischief that our bodies, like unruly children, can get into. We would nod our heads as punctuation to each other's voices, signaling that, yes, we know all about it. We would exchange remedies and try to outdo each other in the recital of our physical miseries. Gently, we would complain, our voices soft and minor key and mournful as pigeons in the eaves troughs. I know what you mean, we'd say. Or a quaint expression you sometimes hear still from older people. I hear where you're coming from. As if the voice itself were a traveler, arriving from a distant place. Which it would be. Which it is. How I used to despise such talk. Now I long for it. At least it was talk. An exchange of sorts. Or we would gossip. The Marthas know things. They talk among themselves, passing the unofficial news from house to house. Like me, they listen at doors, no doubt, and see things even with their eyes averted. I've heard them at it sometimes, caught whiffs of their private conversations. Stillborn it was. Or stabbed her with a knitting needle right in the belly. Jealousy, it must have been, eating her up. Or tantalizingly, it was toilet cleaner she used. Worked like a charm, though you'd think he'd have tasted it. Must have been that drunk, but they found her out all right. Or I would help Rita make the bread, sinking my hands into that soft, resistant warmth which is so much like flesh. I hunger to touch something other than cloth or wood. I hunger to commit the act of touch. But even if I were to ask, even if I were to violate decorum to that extent, Rita would not allow it. She would be too afraid. The Marthas are not supposed to fraternize with us. Fraternize means to behave like a brother. Luke told me that. He said there was no corresponding word that meant to behave like a sister. Sororize, it would have to be, he said, from the Latin. He liked knowing about such details, the derivations of words, curious usages. I used to tease him about being pedantic. I take the tokens from Rita's outstretched hand. They have pictures on them, of the things they can be exchanged for. 12 eggs, a piece of cheese, a brown thing that's supposed to be a steak. I place them in the zippered pocket in my sleeve where I keep my pass. Tell them fresh for the eggs, she said, not like last time, and a chicken tell them, not a hen. Tell them who it's for, and then they won't mess around. All right, I say. I don't smile. Why tempt her to friendship?